Hello, hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Palace Way podcast. Once again, I'm Alex, and I'm pleased to welcome Pat back to the pod. How are you doing, mate?
A little chilly, unseasonably cold here in Florida. I got to 4 degrees Celsius, if my calculations are correct. So real cold. Pray for Tampa.
Yeah, not actual like Florida cold. This is cold, cold, real stuff,
cold,
real
cold,
stuff.
Cold, cold.
Do you mind me asking, for the listeners' benefit, you're recording on your phone today. Is there a technical thing that's going on or?
The technical issue of leaving my laptop at work. Yes. So, yeah, as long as we're clear and good to go, I got no problems doing it. So we'll tough it out.
You're a cat person, I hear, as well. So you said you got a new kitten. Behind you, for listeners won't be able to see this, but you've got like a whole setup, one of those, I forget what they're called, like a play rig for cats, you know, they can jump around and swing from.
We got a cat tree, we call
cat
it.
Cat tree.
Yeah, I got a new kitten, so if there's any squealing or falling behind, crashing of noises, that's probably what it is. Hopefully we can edit those out.
We'll see. Well, one thing that certainly isn't crashing is the Eagles after a very, very successful week. 3 wins, 3 clean sheets in a week, 3 big Mateta goals, 5 big booms, though. But speaking of a big boom, welcome back, Max, to the pods. It's been a few episodes, but glad to welcome you back to talk all things Palace. I'm quite proud of that segue, if you can't tell from the smugness in my voice, but I digress.
I was about to say that was quite smooth. I enjoyed that.
But, good to have you back, though. Seriously, though. How have you been, mate? All good?
Yeah, no, very good. Thank you. Happy to be back.
And happy to have a lot to talk about today, of a more positive note, actually. Like I said, very, very good week. We'll get on to all things Palace in just a moment, although there is something of a slightly, slightly different nature. I know he's no longer with us at the club, but I mean, Wilfried Zaha, a club legend, fond in the hearts of all Palace fans around the globe, and obviously some big news this week coming out from America. Pat, I think it'd probably be natural to start with you as the token American on this pod, our international representative, but Zaha joining Charlotte FC of the MLS in North Carolina on a initial year loan with the option to extend into a further 6 months. How big is that for him? Do you think he'll get back to doing what he does best? Do you think it's the right move for him at this stage of his career? What are your overall thoughts on the move?
I hope so. So it's really the way that FIFA sets itself up. He did have some official matches for Galatasaray before he went out on loan to Lyon. So the way FIFA sets up is you're allowed to register for 3 teams in a season, but you're not allowed to play for all 3 teams in a season. So unless the loophole there is if there's a spring start league, a spring to fall league, because MLS is that league, he was able to go there and play right away. So happy he gets to play. In terms of what he does, it depends on Zaha, you know, if he brings that same passion and same intensity, he's going to do great. But, you know, we haven't seen that in a little bit while with him. So maybe, you know, hopefully his mentally gets back there. But be good for the league to get an exciting player, and obviously great for Zaha. Hopefully he takes it. Not bad.
Definitely. No, definitely. I used to cover Celtic back when I was a sports writer. I was assigned it. It wasn't my choice, but I've got a lot of time for them. And obviously, Leon Abad has been there for a few seasons on the other flank. You know, there's a bit of talent there. So, yeah, really interested to see what he can do. Max, just your extra thoughts on that. I know you were talking a little bit before the pod about, you know, the idea of a retirement league and a few things. I mean, what's your take on this move at this stage?
I mean, I definitely don't mind, like, Pat's optimistic view and recognising that Zaha has finally got that opportunity to get that nice run of games again and kind of be back in that starting 11 kind of selection, which obviously is what he needs. But I can't help but kind of be a little bit disappointed by the transfer. I understand that, you know, we're now in January in the season over here. Obviously in Europe, we're about halfway through the season. And if he, you know, had those conversations where he wasn't going to get playing time at either club and his main priority was playing time, then I don't blame him. I just think it's a bit of a shame because I think now he's gone to the MLS, we're probably never going to see him in European football again. I know that it's never kind of been written off Zaha coming back to Palace in like a coaching role or whatever he would be. But I don't know. I just think it's a little bit disappointing that a player like him at 32 has gone to the MLS.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see what he does after his career, and he's definitely got a few more years in him. So I think we'll definitely be following it closely as fans. I think, you know, I just want to see a smile on his face personally, and I think he'll get that. You can kind of see it. Maybe I'm reading into this too much, but The announcement photos even just look so much more genuine in terms of his emotion, how he responds to them. He's comfortable behind the camera. With the Leon photos on that alone, it just felt forced. Maybe I'm extrapolating, but it felt like there was something wrong there. Just before we move on, a couple of dates for your diary as Palace fans. Zaha v Messi, March 9th, Inter Miami host Charlotte FC. The debate will finally be settled there. And then, of course, the real GOAT, Christian Benteke, July 16th is when DC United next play Charlotte FC, so we can see Palace's own Cristiano Messi face off there. Just a couple of dates for your diary for those that are interested. Main event though, obviously we mentioned at the start, a week of three wins, three clean sheets, three big Matata goals, and plenty of talking points. We'll start with just the overall view of one of or both games, whichever you prefer, whichever direction you want to take it in. Pat, I know you have some analysis, so we'll hold that for now because you did some really good number crunching behind the scenes, and we were all talking on WhatsApp about this. But Max, I'll bring you in first. You were at the Leicester game. Let's start with the midweek one. What was your mood going into that from the stands? What was your feeling surrounding the game, and what was your overall take on the performance?
I think going in quite confident playing Leicester. I do think, like I mentioned last time I was on, when we played Southampton, those are the games that we must win. Like we can't be dropping points against teams that are, I think Leicester will be going down. And I think when we're playing that bottom kind of section that we're not in anymore, we have to win those games. I think first half, we were pretty slow. I want to give props to Hughes. I think Hughes was really, really strong and was definitely getting a lot of recognition from the away support. And then it really was a game of two halves. Like we just came out in the second half and just seemed to, I don't know if Glasner kind of gave them a bit of a kick up the arse at half time, but it very much seemed that way because they came out and they were a lot more positive. JP was allowed to be JP. I think in that game, especially like I mentioned in Southampton as well. But my main taking point away from Leicester, when we were going back home after it, was very much a conversation of why is Eze still not being Eze? And I know he got the assist with the beautiful chip over from the free kick. I think those moments of quality cannot be ignored, and that's why he is the player that he is. But I can't help but feel that sometimes when Eze gets the ball, it's the Eze show. And the groans that come from in that game, especially the groans that came from the Palace fans, it was almost repetitive because of how he would get the ball and he would almost just start walking at times. But like I said about the ball that he put in for the second goal, he just has those moments. And Glasner said after Leicester, happy with the 3 points, but we couldn't play like that against West Ham. And I think that was, it's very, very genuine of Glasner. It's typical Glasner, kind of, as we know, he's quite honest in interviews and conferences. But we did get better in the West Ham game. I think we delivered obviously what Glasner would have wanted.
Yeah, definitely. We'll save West Ham for a little bit, but I think it's still a good point in terms of the overall contrast in performances, both in the halves and in the games. Pat, if you may, I know you wanted to have some points about the overall upturn in performance as well, but just looking at the Leicester game specifically, what were your general impressions, and then what did you pick out from that game as particularly noteworthy?
Yeah, to kind of add on to what Max said, a continuation of what we've seen with Glasner recently, where tale of two halves, the second half, we look a much more cohesive unit. And you saw that against Chelsea. You saw it again here. You see it against West Ham also when we get to that match. But it just shows the kind of manager he is. And we don't know if it's strictly motivation and then trying to light a fire under these guys, or if there are some kind of tactical nuances. It's probably the gray area in between the two. But just really, really great to see a manager that actually watches the game and analyzes it and kind of makes the adaptations and changes necessary to try and get the 3 points. And we saw that against Leicester. Did not look great the first maybe 20, 30 minutes. I thought that our midfield duo, they were getting kind of taken out of position. They were following runners too deep, and we were leaving this huge space right in front of goal, right above the box. And Leicester were looking to exploit that. Luckily, they weren't able to. Once we kind of tightened that down and figured out that we could make some long, direct kind of diagonals or up to even in the center to Mateta, kind of put their back line on stress a little bit. Last 60 minutes of the match or so, we really took it to them. So great adjustments, great to beat the teams we're supposed to be beating, and great to keep them on board.
There was a theme of this continuous improvement between the games. So Max, I'll bring you back in on this one. Just a brief bit about West Ham and what you felt really changed. I mean, we've seen Chris Richards have a resurgence, but I mean, there was so many improvements back to front overall. It felt like Dean Henderson might as well have been sparking up and spoken one out of the bat, because there was nothing for him to do in most of that game, if at all. So just to get your thoughts on West Ham, mate.
Yeah, I think it was, like I just briefly said, a huge improvement from Leicester, not taken away from the fact that we did get 3 points at Leicester, but we could tell that we raised our game because we needed to. I think... I know. I mentioned him about Leicester as well, but it really is the JP Mateta show at the minute. I just feel like he made Mavropanos look a bit silly, and I really miss having those kind of that personality in a Palace team that can do something like that, that can essentially mug off Mavropanos twice and get him sent off. And I know that, you know, the red card didn't massively impact the game and didn't impact the result, but JP was kind of who I wanted to focus on, really. And we've spoken a lot about him recently, so I don't want to ramble on about him, but he was just fantastic at West Ham. He really, really was.
There was such a theme I felt, particularly against West Ham, where there was these line-splitting balls and running in behind from JP, where I felt, like you say, he made the defenders look silly. And this is a very physical West Ham team, not just playing a back three with very good centre-backs independently, but the likes of Souček and Rodriguez, who are, you know, scrappy, tall, physical midfielders, the ball winners. You have Edson Alvarez in there, who, again, is adept at that sort of thing. I mean, I'm sure, Pat, maybe you have a line or two on this specifically. If not, don't worry, because I'm putting you on the spot with that theme. But, you know, I think to take such a physical team under Graham Potter and really, really look much, much the better side in that department, I mean, it takes some doing. So what did you really pick out from perhaps both games, perhaps just West Ham, that I think point to this recent improvement overall, and what's really changed from perhaps the start of the season, where we were a shadow of what we are potentially now?
Yeah, the physicality, the winning of fouls is greatly increasing. I mean, it's important to note that West Ham were playing essentially whatever you want to call it, a 4-2-4, a 4-6-0. They really had, you know, a bunch of midfielders playing up top, Paqueta and Souček trying to get forward. So what we saw since Fulcrum got hurt with West Ham was their complete lack of any yearning to play through the middle. They've averaged about 19% of their attacks through the middle since Fulcrum got hurt. Going into our match, league average is like 27, so super low. And what I predicted before the match, I said, watch out for play to be on the wings and West Ham looking for kind of these cutbacks and kind of long shot prayers, trying to go in these long shots. That's what they did against Fulham, where we could have some, you know, out to in action, keeping the ball out wide, winning the ball and attacking through the middle with cutbacks, through balls. And that's really what we saw. You know, Mateta was the end option on these things, the receiving end of the final ball, and just being more clinical, looks in just way better shape. We got a lot of numbers that can back that up. He's finally back to fitness and he's finally doing what he was doing last spring. You know, the Olympics took a lot out of him. Getting back into play took a lot out of him. But these last, specifically maybe 5-6 matches, we've seen the player that we saw last spring. And, you know, we don't need much data on that to know how much of a difference that's going to make.
No, definitely. It feels like, I mean, there's so much discourse about this right now, but where Mateta ranks in terms of top Palace strikers, maybe that's one for later in this pod, but I think there's definitely a conversation to be had there about not just personality and charisma and the actual ability that he has from a off the pitch standpoint, but on the pitch, obviously, he's a complete handful for defenders in this situation. But looking at the wider team play, I think where's the real upturn been in terms of, you know, perhaps progressive passing or, you know, shot creating actions, that sort of thing? Because I mean, I can imagine that for a lot of these core metrics, there's probably a big upturn in many areas. So I'm quite keen to get your thoughts on that in terms of what's changed in the recent games.
Right. So if we really take a little bit of a step back and look at this season so far into two halves, the first 11, the opening 11 matches, and then these most recent 11, it's night and day difference in terms of the results. The results, we have 7 points from those first 11 matches and 20. So almost tripled our point total in that same time frame in our most recent 11 matches. That's the most important part. You know, goals are going in, goals are not being conceded. but we can take a deep look and think and see why this is happening, if it's maybe a little bit of a blip on the radar, a purple patch, or if it's something sustainable. Well, good news is it does seem very much sustainable, but the way we're doing it is going a little bit back to how we were last spring, where we were a little more direct. We played a little bit differently in a couple different ways, but both aspects were kind of defense first, organizing the defense, and being able to play out on the break a little bit. Where these first 11 matches, we tried to play a little more high press. We tried to play a little more higher back line, trying to, you know, really win the ball back quickly on the counter press. And what was happening was we were just kind of getting caught maybe overextending, getting caught making a bad error, throwing in a tackle and we were out of position, trying to save ourselves. We were like 17th in the league in defensive errors leading to a shot, pretty high. We were super low, like 19th out of 20 in terms of our how accurately we were winning the ball back from dribblers. All signs of just being out of position, not being in the right positions. So these most recent 11 matches, we've seen a bit of a more passive approach defensively, passive and organized. I don't mean passive as in just crowding the box and trying to deflect crosses the entire time, but more of a team that is going to sit back deeper, not play as high of a line, and try and get some space behind and play on the counter. Some good ways to look at that is a metric, a pretty fairly common one now, passes per defensive action, or PPDA for short. Essentially, the higher the number, the more times a defense is allowing the ball to be circulated before going for a tackle, trying to get an interception, making a challenge, anything like that. The lower the number, the more active the team is because they're not allowing as many passes. So Palace went from 9th, so you know, top half in terms of how active they were, first being most, you know, active, down to all the way to 17th. So one of the most passive teams in the league right now in terms of how prone we are to make a defensive action. But we're still first in tackles won, third in dribbles challenged, second in that success rate. So we're still winning the ball back at a really high clip. We're just not as active out of it. So to me, that's showing us that our position is better. We don't need to make these kind of low quality chances at making a tackle. We don't need to make these kind of last ditch options where we're maybe getting beat because we overextended and now we're getting countered. So we're not making these defensive errors. We're not making these poor tackles. And we're choosing the moments better. We're getting the ball up, being more direct, and scoring in fewer touches. I alluded to earlier, Mateta is just a huge part of this. In these last 11 matches, we no striker, no forward, no attacker in the Premier League has gone under any or more aerial duels than Jean-Philippe Mateta. None. He's tied with Chris Wood, but there's no one that's had more. He's not winning them at any higher of a clip. He's still winning them at the exact same percentage, but just the sheer volume of these long balls into Mateta now is just putting constant pressure on these back lines. So he might not be winning them, but when he isn't, we're getting there for ball recoveries. We're getting there to win the second ball back. We're getting direct onto goal, not wasting our time dribbling, far fewer take-ons. And we're just trying to attack the goal in more advantageous positions. And Mateta being there as a focal point has been huge for us, as has Maxime Lacroix just being in the middle, being that field general, kind of dictating and making sure everyone's in position so they don't have to make these poor judgment calls. Yeah, so it's been more of a sit back and counter at pace into the space behind type side. And historically, Palace is good with that. We've had a lot of success with that, you know, in the past decade or so, and even before that. So I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It seems sustainable, and I'm enjoying what I'm watching.
No, definitely. I mean, that's a fantastic analysis, first of all. So thank you for going through some of the numbers, because I think, again, it highlights very, very stark contrast in our pattern of play over time. I think you've articulated that really well. I mean, Max, I'll bring you in on this. I think we know that Glasner is a very detail-orientated coach, as is his staff. We've seen the emphasis on set pieces and positional awareness, and I think the data that Pat's gone through outlines some of that. But when you start to think about this pattern, particularly when you look at link-up between like Eze and Mateta and this, the routineness of the sort of runs we see from Sarr, it seems like we not only have subtle details and a subtle formation, but subtle personnel in those roles as well. How do you think the players have flourished in this way, and how much of it is down just to Glasner, or do you think it's more instinctive on the pitch? Do you think there's a better chemistry between the players themselves?
I think it's really important to recognize it, and I'm glad you kind of brought me straight into this because this was something that I put into my notes earlier, that we ultimately, I think it's a result of the players now being allowed to have that time to be able to gel and build this, I don't want to say new style of play, but implement Glasner ball, if you will, on the team has now had the chance to play Glasner ball, if that makes sense. I take quite, you could say again, but a bit of a pessimistic view that I think we could have started the season how we've seen now. Like Pat's analysis on the first 11 games versus the last 11 games, the sheer difference in how we play, I just think comes from time. And if Parrish had maybe signed, I know the circumstances were complicated with Lacroix, but if we maybe bought in Lacroix, sad to say his name, but Chalobah and Nketiah, if we'd bought all these plays in sooner and the team was allowed to gel more, I do believe that we would have started this season how we're playing now.
Just speaking of gelling, you mentioned Chalobah there, and I obviously the last episode we put that out, I think the day before he was recalled, so we had an inkling that we may have had that segment age quite badly, which it did. But obviously we now know the picture is clear. Chalobah has been recalled by Chelsea. Max, I mean, we talked about, you know, the fact that the squad's gelling and the data is backing it up in terms of this awareness, this better stamp of play. But obviously that's disruption in itself, losing Chalobah from a very settled back three. So what were your thoughts on the overall news? And obviously then take me through how that impacts the squad going forward. We saw Chris Richards come in for these two games and obviously put in an excellent shift. But I mean, what do you think about the long-term future of that back three in particular?
We all know really that we're not going to go in for another centre back.
Mm.
In the last few days of the window, we're just not. Which I'm not massively against when we do have Chaddy Riyad kind of for the future. I would rather see Riyad kind of implemented into that back three with Gueye and Lacroix, and putting Gueye on the right and then putting Chaddy Riyad on the left. That's what I'd like to see, because I just don't think, that's a bit harsh, but I just don't think Richards is good enough for where we are trying to go. I think he can have good games. Pat's not liking that one.
No, I can see it. He's not happy. We'll get you in a bit, don't
Cars
worry.
run deep, buddy.
I do just think, I don't know if he is Premier League quality personally, but I think the whole situation of Chalobah is pretty disgusting, in my opinion. I think it sums up Chelsea Football Club at the minute. The mistreatment of Chalobah, and I was reading something on Twitter the other day that apparently the, I don't know how true this is, so don't hold me to it, but the final decision whether Trevor was going to go back to Chelsea was actually up to him. So I don't know how true that is. I don't know what the clause in the contract was, but I was maybe slightly disappointed. I know it's his boyhood club, and living with a Chelsea fan, I'm reminded of that every day. But I think it is going to impact us, because when I spoke on Southampton before, how he was starting to drive with the ball and kind of take it into that right midfield role, which allowed Munoz to do what Munoz does. So I think that role of him driving that ball forward, I don't really know if Richards is the man to be able to do that. But yeah, I think I would personally, moving forward, not even mentioning the Gueye situation and whether he's going to go in the summer or whatnot, which is looking likely, I would rather see Riyad implemented into that as he's quite young as well, kind of let him build himself into that back three.
Just a bit, we'll bring you in, Pat, on both Riyad and Richards in a second, but just a bit on Chalobah. I mean, I don't know how much of the actual recall was down to the player. I doubt very little, but he would have had some agency and knowledge of the decision prior. And, you know, I can't imagine that wouldn't have come without some degree of assurances of minutes in the short term and probably some apologies and smoothing over the cracks from Maresca and the way he's treated, because at the end of the day, they're both going to have to work together. But nonetheless, I think it was such a shame to see someone in such a good run of form just cut short in in his time like that. And like you say, the way he was banished from the first team, the way his number was stripped of him, which I understand has a lot of sentimental value to him. I think it's related to his mum who passed away tragically at a younger age. And you know, it just the whole spectacle was just disgusting to see played out so publicly as a fan. And it's something that rarely happens, but I don't think fans are really annoyed about the recoin itself. You know, we know we've got depth, we would miss him dearly, but we knew it was a possibility. I think the sadder thing was the way he was treated in the first place, and you know, the fact that just trying to pretend that never happened, it seems from the view of Chelsea, is completely inhumane. Yeah, I think it's pretty disgusting and awful, awful PR and management from the club. And you know, I think a very short-sighted move to send him on loan in the first place if there was ever a risk of this. We now know that perhaps Axel Disasi might be moving on, as we touched on the last episode, and there's all sorts going on at Chelsea, but this isn't a Chelsea pod, but we are very much talking about centre back. So first of all, you know, I'm sort of in the middle here, because to be honest, I do rate Chris Richards. I think he is a very much a Premier League player, but I don't think the room to improve is nearly there like Riyad. I think Riyad also being a left-footed player is something that's quite useful. Not he's left-sided as well, but left-footed player just helps in that it gives him another edge to his passing range. And like you say, I think rearranging the back three in that way does have some merit in terms of what that could offer. But you know, I think both are dependable options with different futures at the club, perhaps, but futures nonetheless. So I will stop rambling. Pat, I want to bring you in now, finally. I can see you've been waiting for this to talk about Captain America, but jokes aside, honestly, what are your thoughts on, you know, the whole Riyad v Richard situation? We saw both of them get meaningful minutes in the course of the last week or so. What are your overall thoughts on how that back three is going to change?
Yeah, and I'll preface this that I think I do look at this very objectively. I like Richards, but I understand the limitations that he has. And we've seen a little bit of a nuance to kind of help what his limitations are in these two matches. We don't have that center back, right back hybrid that Chalobah offered. We don't have that anymore. Klein was the last one. I mean, we could throw Klein in there, but he's shown this season that he's showing natural signs of aging. There's nothing wrong with it. It's happening to all of us. I don't think he's a viable option anymore, at least not consistently, right? We don't have that same style of player. So Richards, who has played center back, he's played a little bit of defensive midfield. He's more comfortable in that kind of defensive half space, or you know, right area right in front of the box. He's not really a fullback whatsoever. We can say he played there. He played there in the academy for Bayern a few times. That's it. He never played there for national team, international, like youth, anything like that. He's a center back. So what we're seeing is as Munoz pushes up, instead of him filling that role, Hughes, who's been on the right side, has been playing a lot wider, almost playing in the space vacated by Munoz. And Richards or Lacroix or Gehi is able to kind of slide up and join Kamada in the midfield in possession when we have a little bouts of longer possession. We see that shape a little bit. So it's a fix to kind of obviously seeing the limitations that Richards has over there. And shifting to it, Hughes has the ability to cover like that. I think Wharton will when he comes back. Lerma certainly does. So it's a nice little tweak that we see that kind of fixes that problem. In terms of Richards, if he's good enough to be a consistent Premier League center back, I don't know. Hey, I don't know. But you can't make that claim about Shadi Riyad either. You know, we haven't seen him at all. And you know, my wife's family supports Betis in Spain. I watch a lot of Betis games. He was serviceable. He's young. He has high potential. We've seen a lot of the passing trees that he can, you know, that he possesses when he was in La Masia playing at Barca's academy. We haven't seen that in the first team level. Part of that could be because he's playing under Pellegrini right now at Betis, and they are very much a direct team. We're not playing out of the back very much. He wasn't allowed to do that much at Betis. But my point is that we don't know much of what we're getting with him either. I'd be okay with rotating between and seeing what works. You know, I kind of think A works better on the left side anyway. So I'm not crazy about him being on the right side. I think he works better on the left, and we have to reinvent the wheel and change everything up just to get Riyad in there. It doesn't seem to make as much sense to me where we could just plug and play Richards. But I think we're going to see a little difference in little combinations and see what works. I mean, they both deserve to play. They both deserve to rotate. And we have the depth right now, which is really good, considering we just lost a starter, that we can still say we have depth in that position.
I know, it feels like we can't say that for many positions.
No.
And just before we end, just want to talk a bit about Romain Eze. We won't do a deep analysis because we did some fantastic chat on that in the last episode, which, by the way, you should go and listen to if you haven't done so already. But I just want to talk a bit about, the fact that he is now here. We've seen the training videos. Max, I'll bring you in here. We know from the last episode, frankly, that he might not be the kind of Elise Wonderkid direct replacement that people may have been hoping for, but there's still reason to be excited for him, even if it takes a bit longer to develop him in potentially. So, Max, I'll bring you in. What do you think of the arrival?
Very, very exciting, in my opinion. It's a typical Palace signing, obviously, which I think as a fan is quite. It's nice to know that we're staying with what isn't broken, if that makes sense. And I'm all behind it. I think a player that even remotely sounds like Eze has to be good, regardless of what position he plays in, but. I think it's very exciting having another Eze type player, that kind of like trickery. I don't even want to compare him to Michael Olise just yet, but I'm just happy that we finally got that left-footed player that we can maybe play like that style that we saw at the back end of last season. I'm really conscious here. I do not want to compare him to Michael Olise. I just don't think that's fair. But the role that he's going to go into, I think we could see. Something really, really exciting. Something that I wanted to ask you to as well was, are you wanting Eze and SA with JP up front with Sarr on the bench now? Because when Sarr first came in, I for one definitely thought that he was going to be that bench player that was going to come on 60, 70, 75 minutes and completely change the game with his burst of pace. Or now Sarr is starting to find his feet a bit more. Do we keep Saar in that position and then SA come off the bench? How do you two see that triangle working over the course of the rest of the season?
I'll leave that one to Pat.
I'll take this one. So just first, in terms of can we get back to the style of last spring? Probably not. And it's what I was talking about before. I alluded to a little bit that stylistically we are going back to the same things we did last spring, but it's really more of a defensive standpoint, where our PPDA is increasing, getting more passive, we'll put it that way, because the numbers with that kind of get confusing. So we're being more passive on defense. We're winning challenges more actively, doing a great job winning that, instead of being a little more out of control, a little more high line. And that's where it kind of ends. In terms of our attack, it's very different, and it's because of the personnel that we have. Where last year we would win the ball back, do a great job, and get it forward right away. Wharton did a great job doing that for us. But because we had Elise, who can play between the lines, and Eze, who likes to play between the lines, and they were able to combine with each other and send Mateta on those through balls after they combined a little bit back and forth, we were a little more slow once we got into the final third. It wasn't this direct approach. We were able to play it through. We were able to combine between the lines before we were able to play it. Usually Mateta being on the end of that. That's because we had guys that like Elise. This year, we're having success with being more direct. You talk about Sarr. Sarr is a more direct player. He was never a possession style winger. He was always someone that liked to get to the end of final balls and attack directly. So we're playing more to that style now. And that's what you're seeing with these long balls into Mateta, who's bringing them down. We're getting it to Sarr. We're getting it to Eze. We're taking these shots. We're putting them on, back post and doing a great job with it, but it's much more quick. And I don't think that we have the personnel right now to go back to that kind of slower, intricate final third play that we had, especially with Kamada playing back in the, further deep as an eight, which, hey, power to him. He's doing great there. So I don't think we need to change it. Why fix what isn't broken? So I don't think we'll go back to that style. I think we'll stay in this more direct approach, which Romain Essay fits very, very well. He fits that style well. But it's going to take a little bit for him to get into the Premier League. It's a different league. He isn't the most physical player. He loses a lot of his aerial duels. He doesn't. He's very active. He's very raw. I don't think he's going to immediately take Sarr's spot, at least not right away. If he comes off the bench and gives 25, 30 minutes and he's electric and he warrants a start, then let's do it and see what it has. In that case, I would put him over Sarr for sure, not Eze. I don't think Eze sits for anybody. You can say that he's looked a little less like Eze this year. First 11 matches, sure. Last 11 matches, Only three players in the entire Premier League have a better dribbling success rate than Abaireze. He's also doing it a lot less in the last 11 matches. So he's picking his moments and choosing wisely. So I wouldn't sit him. It would be between Sarr and Essay, the new Essay. I'm trying to really enunciate there.
Yeah, oh God, yeah. That's fun.
It's tough, right? But yeah, it would be between those two. But I wouldn't put him in right away. I think his skill set, dribbling against tired legs for the last 20 minutes or so, is a really nice thing to come off the bench late in matches.
No, definitely, definitely looking forward to it. I'll save the striker chat for next episode after Mateta bags a hat trick v Brentford. But Pat, while I've got you here, just thank you again for coming on and offering your thoughts. It's been brilliant. Any closing words?
No, I appreciate you having me. And yeah, if you're more interested in what we were talking about, I threw a thread up on Blue Sky. I'm over on Blue Sky now, if you can find me. Yeah, it goes into a little more detail than I can probably articulate on here.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. Thank you for coming on again. And Max, any closing thoughts from you? Good having you on.
No, other than I think, we are looking up, like we really, really are. I think it's exciting now, and like we touched on earlier, we're looking up the table now and definitely not down. So yeah, it's exciting, and yeah, thanks for having me back on.
No, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. If you're not following us already on X, please do so at The Palace Way. It's where the bulk of our content comes. And likewise on Instagram at The Palace Way, we do giveaways, including match tickets, by the way, with our partners. You should definitely go and check that out there. Also, make sure to check out thepalaceway.com for news, articles, analysis, including exclusives, and our very own Wordle game. If you could also leave us a review or a star rating on wherever you get your podcast, please do so. You can leave 5-star, 1-star, whatever you want. Anything helps us improve, and we do keep an eye on everything. All that's left for me is to say thank you again for listening. It's been a real pleasure having you guys on, and up the Palace. And if you're going to Brentford, have fun. Take care.